Are we going?
Into podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
But how's it called? Billis Manger at your service.
Don't forget me.
Don't you forget me.
Oh, let's go! That's class!
There is no such thing as...
A Friendly Mushroom Production. Doctor Who, Series 5, Episode 3, Victory of the Daleks.
Keep pottering on. That's me chewing on a cigar, being like, you know, got the cigar in my mouth, got the corner of my mouth pointed up, because I'm chewing on the cigar and going,
I'm so happy we finally got to see the Churchill Files origin story.
The
Churchill box set.
Genocide, more like patriotism.
Like, I'd like to imagine. I just like to imagine, like, people listening to our podcast all the way back and be like, "Where does this Nixon box set joke come from?" And this is from where it comes from. It's from this episode.
It's from this very confusing episode. Victory of the Daleks.
Yeah,
Potter Who
the Daleks.
Now we're as you already well know, I have to explain to you because Inside Baseball, this is the first time we're doing Series 5. There's a new format a little bit. Right. So this is broadcast on April 17th, 2010. Can you tell me what movie was top of the box office when this came out?
April 2010.
Mm-hmm. I can give you two clues.
I'm gonna guess Thor 1.
Mm-mm. You're kind of close. You're kind of close in terms
Captain
of
Captain America.
No, in terms of imagery, you're kind of close. I'll give you a clue. It's not live action.
Oh man!
Think like Thor image. Like what kind of, you know, what Thor looks like, and
2010
movies from 2010 that may have characters that look very like Thor, the way he's dressed and the way Thor's friends were dressed.
I'm sure there's some audience member yelling right now, yeah. But I'm like Despicable Me?
No, I'll give you a clue. It was like Despicable Me, the first entry in a trilogy. Also, although I suppose Despicable Me is getting the fourth film this year. But it's the first in a trilogy, and it's animated, and it has fantasy elements, and people are dressed similarly to Thor. And its title is kind of instructive in a way.
What the? Hold on. Okay, let me process these cool clues. Mm-hmm. 2010, first in a trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Animated.
Oh, How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes. Okay. So what people are saying, that's how you train your dragon. They're also saying, that's how you do something. Directed by Andrew Gunn, who directed The Beast Below, so obviously we'll have talked about him by now. And written by Mark Gatiss. And this is, believe it or not, and this really took me out of kilter. It's really made me go, oh, am I a robot? This is the first thing he's done since Idiot's Lantern, which was 2006.
Wow.
So, like, obviously he had like that one script that didn't work out in the previous...
He was in Lazarus Experiment as an actor.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, as a writer, it's the first thing since 2006. And he was just told, like, write Churchill versus the Daleks. And he kind of did. And here's also our new thing, as you already know. This episode in a sentence. The Daleks trick Winston Churchill into luring the Doctor to World War II. So you can voice activate a machine that creates new Daleks that are bigger and colorful before they escape into space. That's
when you put it like that, it really does feel like what's the word I'm looking for? This sucks.
Would you care for some tea?
That would be very nice, thank you.
There's three chunks of this episode. There's chunk one, which is the Daleks in World War II. It's like dinosaurs on a spaceship. It's like Daleks in World War II. And then there's a second idea, which is the Daleks have the progenitor. And then there's the third idea, which is Spitfires versus Dalek ship. And like none of them really work on their own. And they also feel so disjointedly connected. Like, it feels like we're forever in that ship. It feels like every time they cut back to Matt Smith, he's still standing in that position, watching those five Daleks in that formation. It feels like that chunk of the show takes like, what, fucking 25 minutes. But honestly, it's more like 7-8 minutes. And everything happens so fast and so slowly. I just think about like when I was really excited to rewatch this episode because season five is the one I've seen rewatched the least. And this one is like, I watched it once and I was like, and I'm good and I'm done. But I was like, okay, is this like a secret masterpiece? Is there something I'm missing? But it really is startling how like I came in thinking, okay, this is the episode where the Daleks pretend to be machines in World War II. And that's out of the window in like 10 minutes in. Literally, it is literally like, you're the Daleks. And they're like, no, we're not. You're the Daleks. No, we're not. You're the Daleks. All right, fine. We are the Daleks. Oh, you got us. And I was reading like Mark Gatiss being like, oh, I wanted to highlight the deviousness and the manipulation aspect of the Daleks' history. And it's like, they don't really do that much manipulation. They really just kind of give up on their fucking plot, on their like disguise so fucking quick. They're literally like, and we are evil again. So I don't know how to feel about that.
It's kind of just like, it feels like an entire episode dedicated to being like, we need a new design. So how do we do it? And the idea is we do the World War II and he gets lured in so he can say, you're the Daleks, I'm the Doctor. So we can activate our machine. And like, that's the entire, once that happens, like it's already solely useless because there's no real sense of threat. It's just Matt Smith, who I think honestly is pretty bad in this, just yelling at them for like 5 minutes at a time. And then, like, you know, they're like, oh, we got you. And then it's like, okay. It just feels like a whole thing that's like built up to this redesign. And then the redesign, we'll get to the redesign in a bit, but it completely like takes the air out of the room as soon as was fucking things roll out.
They really just like put so much oomph into it. And at the end of the day, you're just like, these are just Daleks in other colors. Right? Like, and the first thing they do when they're revealed is they lose. Right? Like, that's the first thing they do. They can come out and they lose and they run away. It's not. It almost makes me feel like, I get what they were trying to do. They were trying to make it look like the Daleks from the Peter Cushing movies, which were much more colorful. But I almost were like, if they opened the door and just a classic series Dalek came out, I feel like it would have worked better. Like the big silver ones. Yeah. So I was just like, I don't know, man. Like that redesign, I don't hate it as much as people seem to hate it back at the time. I think the reason a lot of people hate it is because the first thing they do is kill the bronze Daleks. And I feel like that was such a, like, imagine being attached to those, to that. Like, that's your first Dalek. And then these guys come out and they're like, yeah, this one sucks. We all agree that, right, guys? Hey, guys, you all saw, yeah, boo, boo. What? You want us to kill them? Oh, definitely, we'll do it. And then they just blow it up. And it's like, okay, I guess. Like, nobody was like asking for them, you know? So it's like, then why did we get them? Anyway, and it's telling them, like, they immediately, like, just go, and we're back to the bronze ones.
We got them because they could sell toys, I assume. Because they all have names. It's like Dalek Strategist, Dalek Eternal, which we'll never find out what that was meant to be because
they do nothing! They're like the strategist, the drone. They do nothing.
Yes, they what they do is they roll out of a big like tank, and then they stand in this warehouse for, as you said, what feels like an eternity before they're like, okay, well, you know, goodbye, and that's it. Like, there's no sense of like scale or like epic kind of, you know, fanfare or anything. This roll out and there's there, and it's just so like the whole plan they have as well is so silly that like their plan is, we're going to lure him back to World War II by, you know, getting Churchill to ring. And then Churchill's like, oh, I was worried, but now I'm fine.
Like, we gotta talk about Churchill in a second, but let's keep talking about the Daleks.
It's like the whole, like their whole plan is built on, you know, it the whole plan is so clearly like an extension of, we need to lead to this redesign. How do we do it? Well, how do we make a plot of, you know, they get a makeover. Well, how about the Doctor has to help him do that? But we'll do that. But then, you know, how do we work this into a thing with Winston Churchill?
It feels like such a non-problem to start with. Like, why are they redesigning the Daleks? I guess the idea is, oh, they're redesigning the Daleks because those Daleks we've been seeing up until today were the Time War Daleks, and we're so departed from that, you know, so we got to, like, give new looks to the Daleks. And it's like, by this point, just have them look like the classic series Daleks. I don't really know what's so wrong about that, because it's like, I like the idea that the machine does not recognize them as Daleks because they've like changed themselves so much to survive that even their own machines are like, you're not pure enough. I like that. That's really fun. That's a really cool idea. And it does connect to something I'll talk about later regarding where this episode takes place. But the problem with that is, like, they do all that, and that the Daleks that come out, they look so different that you're kind of stuck thinking, wait, these are purebred Daleks? Why do they look like that? You know, like, you're thinking about the thing you shouldn't be thinking when you're looking at a Dalek, which is, you know, you shouldn't be thinking about, why do they pick these colors? You know, you should be thinking about, oh, these guys are scary, but instead you're like, huh, why are there like so many colored ones? Why these colors specific? Like, why orange? You know, it just feels so weird.
It's weird. And also, it's kind of wild that like Mark Gatiss, like, off the bat was like, I don't like how these look. And Mark was like, I don't like how they look either. Which, in that case, why did you like approve the design if you're both like, you know what, these look like kind of bad? You know?
Well, I mean, the thing they say is that kids like them, which is like, that's fine. I'm okay with that. If they like him, it's good. Just keep it. But also, it's like, I think the problem is we're speaking from a position of, we live in the universe where they didn't, you know, commit to their choice. We have never seen these guys again. Not even in Moffat's own era. I mean, they do show up in like the Big Bang, right?
They show up in the Big Bang, and they show up. There's one in the Series 6 finale, and then Asylum of the Daleks is like, there's two big red ones as like the like kind of generals, and they have like a very subtle redesign where they're more metallic, and they have like a more natural eyeball. And I think once they do like the Series 9 Dalek stories, where they're on Skaro again, I think it's like all classic Daleks. And there's like,
yeah, because by then Capaldi is going like, I need you must make them old. If I am to face the Daleks, they must look old.
He walked into Moffat's office and threw a DVD of Clan of the Daleks and said, I want that. And he's walked out without waiting for a response. It's just like they just look really awkward and really cumbersome. They have the big hump on the back. They have like the kind of, like, they're all hunched forward. It doesn't look threatening. It looks really
I like the eye stalk. I think the eye stalk works for me. The with the little yellow thing, that works. I think the hump is the big problem, because they look like they're all hunched over. But also, the hump, the thing that really gets me is that those giant fucking platforms at the bottom. And then you read that, like, oh, they redesigned them so that, you know, they could match up to like Karen Gillan and Matt Smith's height. And it's like, but Amy never faced these Daleks on screen. So it's like, I just wish somebody would, you know, it kind of feels like in about 20 years, we'll get, you know, like the full official history of these first three eras of Doctor Who, new Doctor Who. And we're going to hear like somebody go, yeah, the BBC was like, we need to sell more toys. Because this was like the era, you know, we got to throw ourselves, kids. There used to be a time where they would make toys out of every single fucking thing in Doctor Who because people just bought them and it was like a huge hit. I remember I showed you this. I bought and I gave to a friend of mine who has never seen Doctor Who a like awful, just so awful, like Ganger version of the Doctor. And it's like they made that. They made that shit. And people would just buy them because it was great. Because people really wanted to have Doctor Who, and then they were like, well, people don't want that anymore. And it's like, well, but you don't have any more toys, so maybe you think that maybe relate to something? I don't know. Maybe if you don't make enough toys, they don't buy toys. Anyway, whatever. I don't care. Moving on.
What's he expect us to do now?
KBO, of course.
What?
Keep buggering on.
Do you want to talk about Churchill?
Yes. All right. So, okay. The thing with Churchill is that he was ostensibly like a monster, right? We can all agree on that. He was very racist and he was like not good to women, I'm assuming. I'm not exactly an expert in the area, but you being from the same island as him, in a sense, like, well, in the sense,
island over from him.
Yeah, an island over. You'd be in the same area. In the same area. So back in 2010 was like, were people just like not as aware of his shittiness?
What happened is that, and this is like, this is just me kind of eyeballing a theory. I can say that like from like 2012, I remember I had it like, I did art for my school, 6 years of art classes and got me nowhere. But our teacher would hang up inspirational quotes on the door to the art class. And one of them was a big printout of Winston Churchill saying like, you know, never give up or whatever. And that was like the big thing, you know, like there's this whole kind of revisionism of like, you know, we need to feel pride. And this, I'm speaking on behalf of the UK, but like it was like this whole big thing, like we need to feel like national pride because like, you know, right now this country is going through a lot and like we need to feel that sense of like, you know, what we had and like, oh, you know, we used to be soldiers, we used to have Churchill. And then when Brexit happened, that kind of spikes and you get like Darkest Hour where like, you know, people are kind of scrambling for some like symbol of, you know, we used to be a great country. Oh, Winston Churchill, and Darkest Hour I think is probably guiltier than this of rehabilitating.
I feel like Darkest Hour is guilty because it came out in 2017. It's just like by that point there is no excuse for Churchill. There is no excuse. I will say like, so the thing about Churchill is like, is it childish to expect a children's show in 2010 to be like, here's Winston Churchill and let's like be realistic about him? I think it kind of is, but by God, they are so chummy with Winston Churchill in this. He's not even a person. He's like a fucking cartoon character. Like he says all his lines. They do the fucking two finger salute. You know, they make all those comments and it's like they give Winston Churchill the same treatment that they're going to give Vincent Van Gogh later. And it's like, it's one thing to give that to a painter or to Agatha Christie or not Nixon, fucking from season one, the fucking Dickens. Dickens. Yeah, it's one thing to give that to Dickens. It's one thing to give that to artists. But to give that to like a guy who led a war. And, you know, I've been reading up on the Elizabeth Sandifer reviews of these episodes because I've just been very curious about it. And they make a point in their Victory of the Daleks review that, you know, it would be kind of silly to expect them to be so critical of Churchill, but that the episode still hints at those criticisms, and that that's something that should be recognized by saying, oh, isn't it weird that like Churchill would be so willing to associate with the Daleks? But here's the thing. He does not know what the Daleks are when he's associated with them. All he knows is that they're weapons. By all accounts, they are pulling off a really good ruse. And the instant they reveal themselves to be evil, he is against them. So it's like, the Daleks are just as much an accessory to the story as Churchill. So, and to me, personally, if we're going to be like, oh, you know, it's one thing to criticize a story for what it does. It's another, but we also have to recognize the possibility of what it could have done. Like the germ of the idea that's in there. Then I feel like we got to give Kirk Blam a pass too, because maybe, sure, Kirk Blam at the end is like, yeah, the Amazon isn't the problem, but the fact that they even went as far as to imply Amazon is a problem, like, is worthy of recognition. Which to me is like maybe you shouldn't have done this episode with Winston Churchill. Like, maybe you should have learned a little bit better. Because the thing that really gets me is not even that he's in this episode and that he fucking, like, does these things and that he's, like, the main celebrity historical character, is that like the doctor is so fucking like chummy with him. Is so like, oh, Winston, oh you my guy Winston. And it's like he should not be, the doctor as a character should not be chummy with anyone who's been alive in the past 100 years. Just to be safe, if they were alive 100 years ago, do not be chummy with them. And I would even go a little bit far. Like, I think you could probably find problematic statements by like Agatha Christie. Fucking, she wrote a book called 10 Little Slurs, you know? But the difference is that the doctor is going like, wow, Agatha Christie. He's not going, you know, oh, Agatha, you're my mate. You're my friend. Like, implying they've fucking gone out to tea together, you know? It's just like, I just feel like, yeah, there's something here to be said. It's almost like the episode starts and you're thinking, okay, they're going to make a point about, like, let's put these Nazi analogs, which are the Daleks, next to in the time where the Nazis existed. And then they go, and we are not going to do anything with that. Like, immediately they go 5 minutes in, they're like, we are not doing anything with that. Don't bother thinking it's going to be about that, because it's not. And to me, that's, you know, that's very disappointing. And that is like a ding in the episode for me.
Same. Yeah. It's just like, It's kind of crazy to say, like, something that is 14 years old is already aged in milk, but like that whole thing just feels so, like, it just feels so misguided and so, like, incredibly old. Like, a lot of this stuff just feels like, you know, part of it feels like a first draft, but also part of it feels like they like incredibly of its time and not in a great way.
Like, this could only exist before Twitter.
This is like 2010 in Amber.
These are the last dying grasps of a culture about to understand what Twitter is.
And it will never be the same. I mean, I will also say that Ian McNeice, I think, is fine. I don't know. I don't think anyone here really is, like,
he's not playing a character.
He's doing the ethnography, and it's just like, whatever. I don't understand we got another episode of this, and we got two box sets of this, and it's like, I don't understand why. Bill Patterson as, I don't want to call him Dickie Bird is his name in Comfort and Joy, but like Bill Patterson as Bracewell, the big buff android that is. It's so funny that they gave the android like really, really big abs.
It's like, he must be cut. The Daleks are just going, need him to be cut.
You need to be swole. Get him swoller.
Robot must be a Chad. A Chad.
Imagine when, like, they opened the thing on his chest, his chin got like more defined and bigger. And you got the big, like, Chad, like, raised eyebrow, and like, yeah. It's like the whole plot line, I think it's just whatever. But, like, there's just so many ideas, but it's also, like, something that's so, like, it's got a lot of forward momentum, I think. And as a result, like, the ideas it has don't have time to settle in. Like, the whole thing of, like, you know, like there's a version of this where the whole will they, won't they of, you know, like will they reveal who they are, that goes on for like, I think, a lot longer in a different version of this than it does here, where it's just like, okay, we gotta do this thing because we gotta get to, you know, you gotta get to the fireworks factory that is a warehouse with a big machine in it. The Spitfires, that goes by in like a flash. Mm-hmm. The android breaking down goes by in a flash. Karen Gillan has like nothing to do in this whatsoever. Right. And it's so like weird. Like she's like, she may as well not be there because she has like that one moment at the end. But like, other than that, like, it's like, there's just nothing. There's like no real, like,
she's the one that stops the bomb from going off. And
yeah,
to me, it's like, that is the one part of the episode that I think still works for me, in spite of the fact that they are not characters and these are not like, mm-hmm. all of this is just like, this is not a thing. Mm-hmm. This is like the most superficial, basic type of story, but it still works for me personally because I'm like, yeah, I kind of really like the whole scene with Bracewell, and when he's like, he realized that he's human and all that. I will mm-hmm. give Moffat credit for this. If this episode had taken place in the RTD era, you bet that he would have been like, I'm human and therefore I'm going to do a noble sacrifice and explode the Daleks. Because mm-hmm. RTD fucking loved his noble sacrifices. He was so enamored with them. And he might still be. We don't know. This episode hasn't... We're recording this before his new season comes out. Anyway, so... But then the moment they introduce that he's a bomb, you go like, why didn't you explode him early on? You know, if mm-hmm. why didn't they leave, go up to the ship, explode it, and then stop the doctor from interrupting? It's like, it's that whole joke that they do in Curse of Fatal Death, where it's like, we'll explain later. But this time they're doing it for real, and so you're like, what? And mm-hmm. and I also think like the final speech, by the end, when they're like, oh, we're going to give you like 30 minutes and you can go, that's pretty cool. That's actually a really good little moment. And I'm like, I kind of wish the episode was entirely about this, you know? Like it really does feel like they went, okay, Daleks in World War II. And they took all these inspirations and ideas. And I think this episode is the most... People like often compare Moffat's era, specifically the Matt Smith era, to like his biggest inspiration was like fairy tales. You know, like the Doctor becomes kind of like a fairy tale creature, like a fairy tale hero. Mm-hmm. And a lot of his episodes follow that logic. But another thing he took a lot of inspiration from, in my idea, was like 50s sci-fi. You know, there's mm-hmm. something very 50s ray punk sci-fi about Bracewell being a robot and then these World War II fighter pilots going to like space. And even 11 Stardust kind of reminds me of that style. But it really does feel like they took all of these ideas from 50 sci-fi and just threw them in a pod and never let any of them like materialize, you know, mm-hmm. and never and let any of them really take shape. And Bracewell is the best example because they're really kind of grasping at something like emotional and poetic about the situation, about the idea of like, how far along are you willing to go to fucking like win this war? How much of your humanity are you willing to give away? Like, maybe if you saw a version where Bracewell was like, hey, I know I'm a robot, but I gotta win this war, and that's why I did this deal with the Daleks. And then the Doctor's like, oh, you can't lose your humanity in exchange for, you know, winning this war, that kind of stuff. But they don't do that. And I feel like it's kind of pointless for us to be like, I wish they had done that, and mm-hmm. they just didn't do it, instead of like addressing this episode in its own terms, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I am the Doctor, and you are the Daleks.
And let's address something as well, which is that Amy doesn't remember the Daleks. She doesn't. She says, "I don't know what they are," and never seen them before. Which, can I just say, you're doing that kind of, you know, it's obviously like a setup. Like, oh, why doesn't she remember like the plants in the sky? No one seems to remember that Canary Wharf happened at all. So it's not really like out of the ordinary for someone to be like, oh yeah, I don't remember this huge event that happened.
Yeah, they're building up to the revelation that everyone's forgotten about, like the mm-hmm. big RTD season finales. But mm-hmm. like, people forgot about them in the RTD show era. Like, mm-hmm. like they would have these big fights and then series three would start and everyone's just acting normal. And it's like, we talked about this. Remember, we were like, hey, what was it? This is the moment that everything changes. Humankind mm-hmm. realized that aliens are real. It's like, then nothing has changed. It's still all the same. Like, nothing changes. Everyone's still going along. Like, no one is like, hey, remember like 3 weeks ago when there were aliens in Canary Wharf? Anyway, gotta go to work. It's like, what? Like, and I think, you know, we're speaking from the position of living after the Chibnall era. I always think about like this whenever people complain that Chibnall didn't like follow up on the ideas of Moffat, or when they praise RTD for following up on Chibnall's era. It's like, it's not the show, every time this show gets so hell-bent on having like super deep in between era continuity, that's when I'm mostly like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. I don't care. I don't care what everyone remembers. Like, nobody remembers this battle. I'll tell you why nobody remembers this battle. It's because they fucking, like, they can't, like, fucking do this shit every week and they have to, like, do these episodic stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why they don't remember. I don't give a shit. That's it. Anyway.
It would have been crazy if the only thing people remembered was Abaddon walking around Cardiff and they were like, what? And the other thing is that there's a crack in the wall. Spooky.
I wonder what that is.
Yeah, three in a row. Wonder what happened. I don't know. It's just it's a silly, kind of boring, kind of incoherent, kind of 45 minutes of whatever. And it has a war criminal in it.
So. Yeah, it has a war criminal. Yeah. I mean, my image of Churchill when I was younger, because I think that not this series, but next series is when I started watching Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. My image of Churchill when I was that age, 2010, 2011. So that was I was 15. My image of Churchill was this and the fucking epic rap battles, Theodore Roosevelt versus Winston Churchill, which I don't think came out at the exact same time. But even that one, they're like, they have a moment where they go, you're kind of racist, Churchill. And it's like when the YouTube web series has a moment where they go, this guy was kind of sus. and Doctor Who doesn't. It kind of makes you go, whoa, guys, we need to like put our priorities in order a little bit here.
Mm-hmm. And the priorities are to give him two Big Finish box sets. Which I don't think anyone's ever listened to. If they have, then why'd you spend your money on that?
Doctor, it's
history.
Something that made me think about how disjointed this episode is. There's a moment where the Daleks go, witness the rebirth of the Master Race. And it's like, guys, the Nazis are downstairs. Are you gonna draw a connection here about between the two? No? Okay. All right. Okay. I guess we're just gonna stare at these Daleks coming up for a little bit more. And I have a hot take, a very hot take. I think the best version of this episode is War of the Sontarans. And I think people are gonna hate me for this, but everything this episode is trying to do, putting aliens into time of an ancient war and making like a thematic connection between that war and the aliens, and also like messing with history and having like a celebrity historical character. I think War of the Sontarans does that so much better. So. Mm-hmm.
And it's got Sontaran on the horse going, I wanted to ride a horse. And that's not in here. So, you know, who's winning? They are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's about it, I think. I don't know.
What an episode.
What an episode. And what a time to be alive in 2010.
Next time on Pod Tour Who Cast.
River?
Follow that ship.
What do you know of
the weeping angels.
But it's just a statue.
Until you turn your back.
Stone angel amongst stone statues.
Perfect hiding place.
We're all in terrible danger.
Keep looking, it can't move if you're looking.
Octa!
Don't blink, Amy, don't even blink.
The time will be upon us. The time of angels.